Hello, I'm Josh.
And I'm Christy, and you're listening to the Dr. Josh and Christy podcast,
where we help you become a family who lives, loves, and leads well.
Today's podcast is brought to you by 22-6 Parenting, an online community designed to help you disciple your kids to live, love, and lead well. Check it out at 226parenting.com.
Hello and welcome back to the podcast. We are super excited that you're with us today. We are talking about our children when they're anxious. And this is a tough one because I believe that we have seen an increase of anxiety, particularly in children, in our culture today. And a lot of researchers are blaming screens for this. But I also think it's important because we talk about, and we've talked about this in a podcast in the past as well, researchers are showing that the second greatest parenting strategy to get the outcomes we're looking for in our kids is how a parent manages their anxiety. Parent manages their own stress. And we live in a busy, hurried culture today where we ourselves are stressed as parents. I know I am more than I would like to be.
Yeah. And I think our kids are just absorbing all of that.
Yeah. There's a trickle down effect for sure. And I think we see it not only in the research, but also literally in the counseling office as well. And so we're going to talk about this today. We're going to talk about it as it relates to each one of us. And we're going to kind of give you a little bit of insight into our own little world with our family and kind of how we've recently had to navigate this as well, particularly with our oldest, with our son. But today's episode, we're talking about when your child is anxious. And we're going to we're just going to cover three ways that we can help practically in our own homes and what that looks like when your child gets anxious. Because it's not a matter of if they're going to get anxious. And I want to make sure that we separate too. There's anxiety disorders, and then there's just also anxiety. Mm-hmm. And we all get anxious.
Yeah.
And so we have to be able to balance. And you may have a child who has a diagnosed anxiety disorder, and you're on you're dealing with this every single day. But then there's also episodic anxiety where there's episodes, there's particular situations that bring about anxiety.
Right. And then there's also the kids that just have a tendency to be anxious, even though they might not be diagnosable or need that. But I think we have one of those, and it's a helpless feeling when you see a child struggling with anxiety, and you want to do something to make it stop. You want to give them peace and calm their brains and their hearts, but it feels helpless. So that's why we're talking about this today. Three ways that we can practically help our kids in those situations.
It does feel helpless, and sometimes this happens when we, I don't know if you want to say it, age inappropriately, maybe expose them to more than they should. Mm. I don't think I did that, but I thought I might have did that in the moment. I was somewhat kicking myself. We had a faulty smoke detector.
Okay, let me tell the story. So basically, we woke up at, 4 a.m. one morning with, the chirping of the smoke detector, meaning the battery was
low. But it
low.
Wasn't going off. It was just a chirp.
No, it was the chirping. Seems to be like every 30 seconds. It probably isn't that often, but it really feels like it. And so the kids heard that and they were kind of worried about it. But then as we were trying to change the battery, I did nothing. You changed it all. But
Now this has started going over a period of days because I hit the button and it goes off.
Like, yeah,
right? And it stays off for 12 hours.
And our smoke detectors are the ones that talk to you as well. So
it's battery is low. It'll say battery is low.
Well, yes, it'll say that too. But when it goes off, when the alarm actually goes off, it's the alarm, but it also says fire, and it sounds horrible. And it's the most, like, I know obviously it's meant to make you move and get out of the house, but it is so awful to hear. And our kids, understandably freaked out.
And
then Josh was the genius to explain to them.
Well, so I'm trying to fix it. And this is going over the course of a number of days because I don't necessarily want to fix it in the moment. I have other things going on. And I know that I'm going to have to do some investigating because they're wired in and the batteries are backup batteries, so it's wired in. So I, you know, even when I changed the battery out, that's what happened. I changed the battery out
and it still wasn't working.
It worked for 12 hours or 24 hours, then it started beeping again and it said battery low. So it turned out to be another smoke detector that was connected in. And till it was all said and done, we ended up changing every single battery in the whole entire house. But the ones that were connected, the main ones, needed to be reset. And so I had to, you know, find the circuit breaker and turn it off and pull it down out of the ceiling and rewire it and reset it and all that. So as I'm doing that one particular day, I have it hanging down and the whole thing goes off and it's going fire, fire, fire. And Landon and Kennedy are standing there and I think they had their stuffed animals. They must have just woken up from a nap or something, or they were getting ready to go for a nap. And so you have these two precious little kids standing there with their stuffed animals. And all I'm envisioning are those stickers that we used to put on windows when I was a kid growing up that said, there's a child in this room, to let firefighters know if there's a fire in the house, there's a child in this room.
You didn't have those stickers.
Yeah, we had those stickers.
Okay. Okay.
Growing up.
We weren't loved enough to have those stickers, I guess.
Well, it could have been a U.S.-Canada thing, too. Yeah, maybe true. We had regulations. I don't know. So all I can think about, and so I'm thinking, okay, what if this actually did go off for real? I have to tell them what this actually means. And so they weren't really all that scared until I told them what it meant. And that's when they said, because it was just an annoying sound. But then when I told them that when they hear that sound that we have to get out of the house, then they started welling up with tears. And it was like, well, then we have to get out of the house now. And I'm like, no, buddy, no, guys, like it's okay. And so for the next number of days, even if the toaster went off and made a chirp sound.
Or the microwave. The finishing beep.
Daddy, we have to get out of the house.
And tears, like instant tears.
Yeah. And so this became an issue for us. And so I jokingly told Christy, I wish I would have told him it was, you know, they're like, what's that sound? I was jokingly wishing I would have told him it was the ice cream truck and had some ice cream sandwiches in the freezer or something. But truly, our kids need to understand the dangers of the world.
Yeah.
There are dangers in this world that they need to be exposed to and understand age appropriately, because we want them to be able to get up and get out of the house if they hear that. But our kids were anxious, especially our oldest was really anxious about this. And and so we just talked about three different ways that we started working with him and meeting with him and his anxiety. And one of the reasons that we're really honing in on this topic is because it's a topic that we're seeing not only within ourselves, but also with the parents that you know, really all over the country. I mean, just in terms of people that we hear comments from and that kind of thing. And it's also something we're going to address in 22-6 Parenting coming out here in June. In fact, the cart is now open. And so if you go to 226parenting.com, you can sign up. Fear Not is the mile marker, which is we have mile markers that we're taking kids through each month. Fear Not or Anxiety is what we're going to be walking through the month of July. Do Not Be Discouraged is in August. How to Control Our Anger. Do Not Sin in Your Anger is September. And so we're going to continue to walk through these mile markers with our kids as we disciple them. And so we thought, man, this is one that just comes up over and over again. So we're going to address it early on in 22-6. And here's some ways today we've done this with our kids. So number one.
And yeah, number one is let them ask questions.
Yeah. So let them ask questions, because if they ask questions, it's starting to process in their brain. Because they're experiencing the fear. They're feeling the fear. And this is what I love about Paul. In Philippians chapter 4, he says, be anxious for nothing, but in prayer and supplication, make your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will keep your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. So in your anxiety, take it to the Lord. Talk about it with God. With our kids, in a finite way, we become that peace for our kids that they can talk to. They can come to us in their anxiety and they can ask questions and they can talk to us. And it literally wires their brain to put language to what they're experiencing, and it has a calming effect on their brain. Mm-hmm. So another quick example is a couple weeks ago, Christy was out she was out doing something, getting hair done or nails done, or I don't know what you were doing. And I was at home with the kids, and we were upstairs in our playroom, and we had the windows open because it was a beautiful spring day, but there was a screen there, and Landon kept pushing on the screen. And I kept saying, no, don't push on the screen. You'll break it. And I was more worried about them breaking the screen than I was them falling out the window. But then Landon looked at the warning sign at the bottom. He says, Daddy, what does that say? And so I read it to him. I didn't read it at first. I just read it out loud, not even thinking. And it said, warning, screen will not prevent child from falling out window. And so I was like, okay, buddy, that's another reason you don't want to push on the screen, because you could fall out the window. Well, he walked away from the window at the time and went and played trains after that. And he didn't
go
close.
Word, right?
He didn't say a word. He didn't go close to the window again after that. It wasn't until that night at about 2:30 in the morning, beside my bed, I feel this tap on my shoulder, and it's him. And he says, Daddy, we don't push on the screen or we'll fall out the window, right? Hmm. And I said,
sweet buddy.
I said, I said, we don't want to push on the screen. And so I walked him back to his bed, and I could tell he was upset, but I mean, it's the middle of the night. I'm ready to go back to sleep. So I decided to lay down with him because I knew he was a little bit scared. So I just laid down with him. Not more than 5 minutes later, our daughter wakes up. And I heard her. And so I went and got her. I went to go get her. And as I did, he started crying uncontrollably in ways that he hasn't. Like, this was out of the norm. And so much that Christy heard him. And you went over at that point. And because this is key. I think you did such a great job with this.
I mean, he was just overcome with fear. And you could hear, I mean, in that question, you can hear he's processing it. And he's only four. So he's just processing the dangers of the world. Obviously, depending on your kids' ages, this will look so different. But for him, this was falling out of a window. And so I just went into his room and I laid in bed with him. And I said, tell me, buddy, like, ask me questions. What are you thinking about? And so he started asking me like the craziest questions about, can you fall out of a... like everything. What happens if you fall out of this? Can you fall out of this? And I probably laid there for 30 minutes just answering these questions, which, I mean, in all honesty, they seem insane to the adult that understands gravity. But he didn't get it. And he just needed to talk it through. And it was like after 30 minutes of just asking me questions and talking about falling out of things like it wasn't that big of a deal. I was like, yeah, if you fell off a ladder, that would probably hurt. If you fell out, you know, that would probably do really a lot of damage to your body. But he was just able to talk about it. And then he was fine. We've never heard about it since.
We haven't talked about it since. In fact,
and he went right back to sleep. And so I was real thankful. I was thankful he just opened up, because sometimes it's even hard for them to put language to those things. But
yeah, and I think it's important to, and that's why we just say this, have them ask questions, because when we lecture them in their anxiety, it's like anybody, it's like us. Yeah. When we're anxious or fearful and we're being lectured to or talked to, we're not necessarily listening to what's being said to us. But when we're able to process it ourselves and just ask questions, it's kind of like if you have the cold. If you have a cold and you have a runny nose, but no one ever told you what the common cold was, and you start having a runny nose and snot starts pouring out and it's just sticky and nasty, and you're like, I mean, you could think that you're going to die because you have no idea what it is until someone comes along and says, oh, it's just the common cold. Yeah. Now all of a sudden, you know, your brain's calm because it's putting it in perspective.
Well, and it's just allowing them the freedom that those questions are okay.
Yes.
Right? And like, I'm not going to tell you that's a stupid question.
And that's what you
dumb.
Did really well. You, at 2:30 in the morning, God bless you, had the patience. It's true. You had the patience, the calming voice, and the listening ear that our son needed to calm his brain. Hmm. And then I love what Paul says is, therefore, think about things that are noble and true and pure and holy and excellent and praiseworthy. We can't think straight when our brain is overwhelmed in fear. And our kids especially the younger our kids are, they're just now learning about the world. They don't come into the world understanding these dangers. And I thought that was what you said to me when you came back to bed was, he's learning about the dangers of the world but doesn't know how to process them. And how as we think about our kids in those lights, instead of seeing it as an annoyance that he's up at 2:30 in the morning, instead of seeing it as maybe he's just disobeying and they're not listening and they're just this is annoying behavior, I think really getting into their world, being emotionally safe is what we talk about in the book Safe House, being emotionally safe and just having that listening ear and allowing them to ask questions and being okay has a calming effect on their brain.
And I think, you know, for the parents struggling, separation anxiety being a big one, anxiety with school, all those things. But it's the same thing applies. It's just allowing them to voice those things and that knowing that you're the safe person that will always be there to hear them, because they often feel like they're alone in their anxiety.
Yeah. And which leads us to number two, which is play with them. So number one is in their fears when they're anxious, listen or allow them to ask questions. And listen to those questions. But number two is play with them. And this is especially true and important for children under the age of 7. It's true for all of us, no matter our age, but especially for kids under the age of 7, because fantasy play is critical for them to calm their fears down. Our daughter was in the hospital and she came up to you afterwards, right?
Yeah, literally the next day. Actually, it was the same day. The same day we were released from the hospital. It was kind of one of those situations where it was so not expected. We had no idea she was that sick. So it was scary. It was scary for all of us. I can't imagine what it was for her being so little. And I'm not sure we did a great job in the moment, being human, of controlling our anxiety. But when we got home, she started telling me about her boo-boos and how they had a real tough time getting the IV in her. And so that was probably the most traumatic part for her. So she wanted to talk about the man who gave her the boo-boos on both arms. and then she said, "Mommy, when I wake up," meaning the next day, "I want to play hospital and you
no,
get
she
the
said,
boo-boos."
She said, "I want to go to the hospital."
Yes. "I want to go to the hospital and I want you to get the boo-boos."
And meaning, you were confused. You're like, "No, honey, we're not going back to the hospital."
Yes, but she meant play. Like, "I want to play hospital and I want you to be the patient and I will be the one to give you."
Because it's about power.
The boo-boos, yes.
She's the one who wanted to be the doctor. And that's the way our kids process their fears. That's the way that they a lot of times will, whether it's drawing and coloring, drawing pictures. You know, sometimes what we'll do is we'll ask our children, because, you know, they have this, you know, like most kids, it's thunderstorms, right? So let's draw a picture of a thunderstorm, mm-hmm. and let's draw us in our house during the thunderstorm. And even the very act of them drawing it out, you can start to see some of their fears. Well, you know, who are they drawing in the picture? Is the rain getting to them? Is the wind getting to you? Is there a lightning bolt? What are they most fearful of? And a lot of times just seeing that play out as they play it, is really important. The power of play as we play with them isn't, though, that we say, "Hey, let's play this game," or "Let's go throw baseball in the backyard." It's that we go into their world.
Yeah.
And there's a power in this where, because they use play to make sense of their feelings, when we can enter into their world, it has powerful implications on their self-competence later in life, their ability to process their fears.
Yeah.
And we were just speaking recently met with a family whose child was having difficulty with separation anxiety.
Yeah.
And came to find out that another sibling had been in the hospital and was sick and was getting a lot of the attention. And so this was a middle child, I believe. And so there was the baby who was getting attention. There was the oldest who was in the hospital. And so the middle child the middle child was really struggling with separation anxiety. And, you know, one of the things that we kind of just said, recommended, was saying, "Hey, get at least 20 minutes a day with that child and enter into his world. Just enter into his world." And the family got back to us and said it has had a tremendous effect.
That was so cool. That was one of those situations where you're like, "That's awesome." I mean, yeah. It's just playing. She just committed to 20 minutes of command-free play with him before school for a week, and there was not one. He was throwing fits. I mean, it was getting pretty dramatic. He was getting in really big trouble at school all day. And he did not have tears once that whole week. So
yeah, it was,
it's powerful. Like, it seems easy. It seems like that can't really.
And this is where we talk about, you as a parent have everything you need to raise great kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's really comes down to us and our presence. That's what our kids need most. Yeah. They just need us, which is why you see the trickle-down effect with the anxiety.
Yeah. And lastly is be calm, which is really, it's stopping that trickle-down before it starts and allowing the trickle-down to be the calm. Because if we're anxious, our kids don't know if they can be safe, right?
Yeah. It's like you...
They feed off of the anxiety we feel.
And one of the things that we struggled with this is that our daughter early on had stomach allergies in the first 6 months that we couldn't figure out. And her cry was just... It was the most brutal cry you'd ever hear. Didn't matter what she was doing. The cry just immediately made you jump to find out what was going on because you thought
awful.
She was... I mean, it was...
It was really awful.
I mean, you just had... You thought it was the worst. And so from there on out, we kind of were conditioned that whenever she cried, we jumped. And I still, to this day, I start hearing my kids cry and I jump immediately and I'm like, oh, are you okay? Are you okay? And Christy's like, Josh, it's just a skin knee. Knock it off. Like, because our overreact, it's the mirror neurons in the brains. Yeah. Our kids feed off of our reaction. And when we're overwhelmed or we overreact, it's easy for them to overreact as well or just feel like this situation's not in control.
Exactly.
I equate it to, and I don't mean to go political here, but I equate it to 9/11. Hmm. And, you know, after 9/11, had we had a president, I think Bush did a good job of standing up in a calm way and saying, we've got this. And it kind of helped. But if you had a president who stands up there after a major terrorist attack and you see them like, you know, we have no idea.
This is terrible.
This is terrible.
Yeah.
We have no idea what's going to happen. Like, the nation would go crazy. Like, it's the same thing with a parent. That child needs to look up to the authority figure and go, okay, this is going to be under control. And even if we as parents don't necessarily know what we're going to do next, the ability to have the calm ourselves by going to the Lord and having our own brains calm has that trickle-down effect, and it makes the whole situation so much, because we can navigate it as parents a lot easier than our kids can, especially when they're not able to verbalize it. And so us being calm is really, it goes back to that.
Exactly. And I think I struggle, you know, as an average parent, I struggle with my own anxiety in a way that, like, especially in those situations, it is hard for me to stop and filter. Like, the kids don't need to know how bad the situation is. They don't need to feel it. They don't, because they don't, their brains can't even process, right? Like, we have a few friends whose children are just really intelligent, is probably the best way to say it. Far above average. And they struggle with anxiety. And some are diagnosable now because it's like they are understanding too much of the world. They're just, their brains can understand too much. But to their age level, they don't know how to process it. And so I think that's where we as parents have to, it's such a challenge for us to only expose them to enough at their age appropriate level, right? You know, in the moment, that is so hard. Like, in the moment, when we're being sent to the emergency room this weekend, it's really hard to act like, okay, guys, we're going to go in here.
Yeah.
And they're gonna look at Kennedy for a little bit because she's not feeling so good. You know, it didn't feel like that because those were not the things they were telling us.
Well, and especially because you and I were already depleted.
Yeah.
Just in life. And
right.
And then we were hoping for our weekend to be just relaxing. And then when...
Yeah.
They reacted the way they did, it just sent you and I into tears and just kind of like, oh my gosh, now what? And so
right. It's
very easy for that to happen.
But that's just one example. But yeah. Like, it's the stuff life throws at you, right? It's the unexpected. And I think that's why that made a study where it said, wasn't that the number two factor?
Yeah, love and affection, number one. And number two is how we manage stress as parents.
Found the greatest outcome for the kids. For what we want for our kids,
yeah.
Basically.
It becomes
the greatest
who we
predictor.
Are.
So
having that presence. Exactly.
Such a challenge.
Exactly what you were doing with Landon in the middle of the night, a listening ear, a calming voice, and that love and affection of saying, we're going to get through this together. So if you, again, talking today about the ways that we can help our kids when they're anxious. If you haven't checked out 226 Parenting, do that. 226parenting.com. The number's 226 and then parenting.com. And sign up. We're going to be navigating this. We're going to have morning time questions or morning time prayers, bedtime questions, dinner time stories, and drive time games surrounding Fear Not for July. Do not be discouraged in August and on for those mile markers. So we're super excited about that online community to disciple our kids to love God and love others well. It's core of our hearts at this season of life, because we want nothing more than to have our kids' generation love God and love others well. So check that out, and thank you for joining with us today. We're excited to journey with you through 22:6.
For more information and resources, or to connect with us, go to drjoshandchristy.com. We're also on Instagram and Facebook at Dr. Josh and Christy.
And be sure to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the Dr. Josh and Christy podcast. Write a review. The more positive reviews we get, the more people learn about it. Tell a friend and be sure to send us ideas, thoughts, and questions you may also want us to cover on the podcast.
It's an honor walking alongside you.
We'll see you next week.